Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host, Damien Abraham, and once again, I am bringing you a conversation with someone who grew up listening to punk, may or may not still be involved in the genre, but had their life changed by it in a major way. And today on the show, this ain't no ordinary show, everyone. Today, it is a very special live from Sound on Sound Music Festival in Austin, Texas edition of Turned Out of Punk. So we've got Dave Kelling from the band Culture Abuse, one of my favorite new bands. He's making his debut on the show in the live setting. And we also have returning to the show, though, Chris Slorak from Metz, one of my good buddies. Saw him tonight at dinner, even. And MVP, who breaks the record as being the most appeared on guest on Turned Out of Punk. This is his third time. And joining me as a special stand-in for Chris O'Toole doing Turned Out of Punk footnotes with me is Turned Out of Punk footnotes regular contributor and former guest Dave Ackerman of the band Tear It Up, of Splitting Headache, so much more. One of the most knowledgeable people about music I know, especially punk, I should say. And anyway, more on that in a second, as if I haven't given you tons of that already, but more on that in a second. There's even more to tell you about that. If you want to get in touch with me, head over to DamienAbraham.com. It's a website where I have an email address. You can send me an email. You can also check out old episodes of the show. But more importantly, at the top of that page, you will see Tour-Tope Live. Click on that tab, and it'll take you to a page where you can pick up your tickets for the Turned Out of Punk Live Tour. So that's right. You're listening to the live episode today. Give you a taste of what I'm going to do on these dates. I've confirmed some guests. I can say that there's lots of former guests so far coming on. There's, you know, some new guests. I'm going to throw out a couple names right now. Greg from Locking Out is going to be there at one of the shows. Walter from Quicksand, Gorilla Biscuits, Walter Streifels, former guest, is going to be at another show. I've got Jeff Cannonball making a return at one of the shows. Meredith Graves is going to make her highly anticipated return to Turned Out of Punk at one of those shows. Michael Olago is going to be at one of those shows. There's tons of stuff that's going to be happening for this Turned Out of Punk live tour. So go to those dates and buy your tickets now, because those venues aren't huge and they will fill up and you would want to be there. I'm going to have merch and everything. It's going to be fun. You'll hear on this episode. So anyway, go there, buy your tickets. But if you still want to find other ways to get in touch with me, you can find me on social media at Left for Damien. You can also, on various forms, you can also go to Facebook.com, and there's a Turned Out of Punk Facebook page. It's run by my brother, Tristan Abraham, and you can send him a message. He'll get the message to me, and you can also see some of the cool stuff that people send us that we post up there. And if you don't use Facebook and you still want to see that cool stuff that people send us that we post up there, you can go to turnedoutofpunk.tumblr.com and check it out there, because we stick that stuff up there too. And if you would like to support this show, though, you can do that if you use iTunes by heading over to iTunes and subscribing to this podcast, writing a review and rating it. You will also see up there are some other podcasts in the Turned Out of Punk family. There is Clobberin' Time, there's Footnotes, and there's Oil and Flowers. Oil and Flowers is hosted by my good buddy DJ Buddha Blaze and myself, and that one's about cannabis. Clobberin' Time is hosted by Tom Bryan and myself, and that one is all about pro wrestling. This week, Colt Cabana's on, which is the whole inspiration for this show is Colt Cabana's podcast, The Art of Wrestling. So him being a guest on that show is a big deal for me, a big, big deal. And then, of course, there is the original spinoff show hosted by Chris O'Toole and myself, Turned Out of Punk Footnotes, where each week we dissect a Turned Out of Punk episode and go in depth. And this week on the show, we're going to have a special guest to go through this episode. So anyway, check those out. If you don't use iTunes, you still want to support the show, tell your friends, come and see us at a live date, and otherwise just, you know, say nice things. That's the best way to do it. But anyway, please tell your friends and let them know if you think you know someone that would like this show. Help spread the word. Also, if you haven't yet, please go over to vice.com or youtube.com and watch Bloodlust Tournament of Death. I think if you're on YouTube, it's like the most violent wrestling in America. Search most violent wrestling in America, Vice, and you'll get this documentary that I made with a bunch of my buddies, bunch of my friends at Vice. Shawnee is the director, Shawnee Cohen, one of my an amazing director. It is an unbelievable unbelievable documentary. And that's not me saying it because I'm hosting it. Believe me, if I had nothing to do with it, I would still say this is an unbelievable documentary. So please, if you haven't checked that out, go over there and check it out. While you're over at vice.com, check out some of the other stuff I did. I write articles, other videos. I do tons of stuff over there. So check that all out while you're watching that documentary. Also, Fucked Up is going to be playing December 30th in Detroit. You can find out details about that by going to fuckedup.cc. We're going to be playing with Suicide Machines, Black Dahlia Murders, Mustard Plug, Municipal Waste. It's going to be a fun show. So check out that show coming up. And yeah, I think that's about it. That's how all the ways you can support this show and me. And I guess we should just dive on into today's episode. Today on the show, it is an amazing one. It is a taste for you of these live shows that I'm going to be doing. Gives you a taste of the kind of format I want to do for all these things. And, you know, and this was a really cool experience. Sound on Sound Music Festival, which is one of my favorite music festivals in the world, as I say in this. Even though it's the first one, these are kind of the core people that were doing Fun, Fun, Fun for years before that. And if you've never been to Fun, 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 you missed out because that was an incredible festival. And so they've taken that spirit and put it in a Renaissance fair, and now it is Sound on Sound Music Festival. And it is it was such a great time. I don't think I've had that much fun at a festival, God, in a long, long time. I got to see so many great bands, so many friends, hang out, and I got to do a live podcast. Now, originally, I had planned to have Jeff from Thursday kind of come back and do his big return, but, you know, communications got crossed, and he was unable to make it. But what happened instead was, you know, this whole thing kind of came together. Chris Slorak, amazing buddy of mine, one of the people I've known the longest in Toronto from Mets. Dave from Culture Abuse, Dave Kelling from Culture Abuse. And if you have not heard Culture Abuse yet, you are really missing out. They are one of the most exciting bands, in my opinion, happening right now. I love them, so got to have him on the show. And then, of course, MVP, who is back for the third time. And yeah, like MVP drove up from Houston, and was here for the whole thing, and just, you know, proved once again why he is one of my best buds. And we had an amazing time. And then, on top of all that, I was joined by former guest, New Jersey hardcore legend, Dave Ackerman of the band Tear It Up. And he is here, hilarious. You'll hear it all. So anyway, I'm not going to waste any more of your time. I want you to enjoy this because it is a good one. It's a short one, but it's a good one. So everyone, sit back, relax, before you sit down and relax, buy your tickets for the live shows, and then sit down and relax, and you will be ready for Sound on Sound presents Turned Out a Punk live from Austin, Texas. Now you can hear me. I think we got a broken mic. Dave, you're losing your mic. Hey, thank you so much for coming out to the first ever Turned Out a Punk Live. I feel a lot more comfortable if I was yelling in your faces right now, but this is incredible to get to do this. This is my favorite festival in the world. It's the first one, but trust me, the people that do it have been working in this business for a while, and they know how to book something where you get such fortunate conflicts as Girls Against Boys and Flag playing at the same time. You have to decide. But they fucked me over too one time. They had me playing against Chain of Strength. I wanted to skip my own show, but I didn't. Anyway, this is going to be a fun time. I got some awesome guests here. Jeff may or may not make it in time. He's stuck in traffic. But don't worry, I got surprises that are not better than Jeff, but as good, if not better. That's not me, though, that music part. But first, I'm going to introduce another concept. If you listen to the podcast, it's a weekly show where every episode starts out the same way. I ask someone how they got into punk, and we just talk for a super long time. I totally kind of borrowed the concept from a guy named Colt Cabana, who's a wrestling podcaster. He's pretty popular in the field. He does an incredible show called The Art of Wrestling, where he has various wrestlers come on and talk about their lives. And I was like, these people live very similar lives. Granted,
much cooler and more dangerous than us in music, but very similar lives to us in music. So I could probably figure a way to do this in my own way. And that's what I did. But on that show, there is another adjacent podcast by the name of Turned Out of Punk Footnotes, where every week we dissect a Turned Out of Punk episode and go into the nitty gritty and really nerd the fuck out. And I can't have Chris O'Toole here as my co-host for that, but I had to have someone from the Turned Out of Punk Footnotes family. So let me welcome to the stage my good friend. You may know him as Dave It Up, Dave Aukerman from Splitting Headache and Tear It Up.
Hello?
Yeah, bring it over, Dave.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if I was just going to sit over there.
Oh, thank you, sir. Okay, so that is the start of this. I'm going to introduce this concept to you because it's going to be this the unique feature of this show. Is Dave is going to be over there, Dave, and what are you going to be doing?
I'm going to be taking notes, and then I'm going to be interjecting periodically, but mostly being quiet until it was my turn to talk.
Yes, and then Dave will be welcomed back to the stage, and he and I will nerd out because I know a lot about punk, but Dave knows a shit ton about this genre.
If there's ever a time that being a one part Punisher, one part just nerd about music comes to those two, the Venn diagram of those two things comes together, it's Turned Out of Punk Footnotes.
Turned Out of Punk is truly a celebration of all the shit people would find abhorrent about punk rock nerdism.
Yeah.
Collecting records, like all the bullshit.
It's not something for everyone. It's like it's one of those things, like a lot of things, either it's really up your alley or couldn't disinterest you more.
Well, Dave, I got to kick you off your stoop because I got to invite our first guest out. This is one of the people I've known longest in music. This is someone that we realized this before we came to the stage. We've known each other now for 21 years. He is also a member of probably one of the best bands ever from Toronto, in my opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Slorak from the band Metz. Thank you, Chris. How's it going?
It's going good.
I'm not very good at this yet. I'm learning.
I was just trying to figure out what that was.
It's my laptop.
You know what I mean.
Oh, you mean my DJ program, iTunes? I'm a laptop DJ back home. If you want to book me, it's very expensive, but I assure you it's worth it.
Yeah. The tech's tight.
Yeah, the tech's tight. So, Chris, you and me, we've known each other now for like 21 years, dude.
21. I think I met you in the basement of Who's Emma after getting hit in the face with a bottle of root beer by Steve Perry. I'm going to pretend that that's when it was. We were at a Countdown to Oblivion show, and Steve Perry is this older fella, you know, recent dad.
He's a dad now?
Well, I don't know. That's what you told me.
I don't know if I...
Okay, forget it. He's not a dad. But
he's a dad to all of us hardcore kids.
That's what I think you meant. He was a dad to all of us at the time.
He's a scene parent.
And he showed up for this Countdown to Oblivion show, and with a full sealed bottle of root beer, they hit the first note, and he threw it, and it hit me straight in the middle of my forehead and knocked me right on my ass.
It was an unfortunate period in Toronto where everyone had to be nuts at a show. So you'd just see bands. And, like, some bands would be legitimately terrifying, you know, like Haymaker, and they'd smash it, and you'd be like, oh, shit.
Or Left 4 Dead.
Or Left 4 Dead.
I got kicked in the chest at a few Left 4 Dead shows.
There's a video of Left 4 Dead where the guitar player beats up someone in the crowd, and then the riot ensues, and you hear someone just before the video cuts off go, I got hurt for real that time! And then the video cuts off. Might be one of my favorite hardcore videos ever.
Not all Canadians are peaceful.
Like. No.
Left 4 Dead was never a very peaceful band. Haymaker, I mean,
it's a scene. It's that Hamilton scene.
There's a continuing darkness with it all, really.
Not anymore, though. You go to Hamilton now, it's like Williamsburg North. It's like everyone couldn't afford to live in Toronto. They just moved to this other city, like, right next door. But it's still kind of like, still got that seedy underbelly. Yeah,
there's so much craft beer.
So much craft beer.
You can't get a beer that's not crafted. It's just all crafted.
But Chris, like, I kind of think that the thing that's amazing is that, you know, we're two people that came from, I don't know, like, very similar kind of periods in time, but had very different paths to wind up meeting in the same practice space. That's right. We share our practice space. Yeah.
That's where all the hits are made, right? Fucked up, Mets.
Just career suicide.
Career suicide, too, yeah.
Yep.
And shit. You guys heard shit? Yeah.
All right.
One of the greatest Toronto hardcore bands right now.
Shit.
Yeah. Everybody loves shit.
Everyone. Toronto has definitely got now the corner on weird band names.
That's true.
This morning I came down and I saw Des Cadena trying to tell Rhino, the tour manager, about your band. And he's like, yeah, it's Mets. But not the Mets, the team. It's like, they're awesome. It's like the Mets. Like the place in France they're named after. But it's not the same. It's present.
That totally nerds me out.
I know. It's kind of crazy. That's the thing about this festival. You're like walking around and it's like, oh, that's a legend.
You got in a 5-minute conversation with Keith Morris on our way over here. Yeah, like if you try and walk through here with this guy, you're not going to be able to.
No, because I will punish every single person I see.
I
will just like abuse them and force them to
invite them to sleep on your couch and look after your kid.
Babysitter, you know, that's not a weird thing to have.
There's some solid morals in there, I think.
It's solid. Yeah, solid morals.
I don't know.
He's got maybe. Have you read his book yet?
I haven't read his book yet. Okay, but I will as soon as I'm done this podcast.
That book. There's so many crazy punk books that came out around the same time.
Yeah, I read Harley's book. Did anybody else read that?
Harley Flanagan from the Cro-Mags book.
I didn't know that book was out yet.
It's out. My brother told me there's parts in it where like a story happens in part of the page, and then
I thought you guys were hardcore.
Well. We already know all the shit in the book, Chris. We don't have to relearn it.
That's true.
You know?
Can I ask a question about the book? Is it in all caps?
you could really read it that way, actually. It kind of feels like someone's screaming in your face at certain points.
If it's not all caps, I'm going to say Ghostwriter all over.
He handed it in all caps.
Hey, Harley, so this chapter that I'm working on, what's the vibe we're going for this thing?
Screaming.
That dude's like... That dude's been an author since he was 8 years old. Harley Flanagan put out his first book with Allen Ginsberg when he was, eight? That book comes out?
If not younger.
Also, an 8-year-old hanging out with Allen Ginsberg is a weird hang.
Yeah? That seems like it might be illegal.
I worked at this crazy video store. It was a very bizarre video store. And we had... A lot of people... in Toronto would go there and rent some of the weird videos we had, and we had a documentary called Chicken Hawk that's about NAMBLA, and Allen Ginsberg is all over it. And you're like, if you don't know what NAMBLA is, check out a Turbo Negro's first record and the song Midnight NAMBLA, or the first American released record with Midnight NAMBLA.
Or Google that from your work computer.
Yeah, Google it from your work computer.
The best way to learn about NAMBLA is to listen to Turbo Negro.
From NAMBLA.
No, that's true. It's not the worst way to
learn. Yeah, you don't want to learn about NAMBLA from someone from NAMBLA.
No, that's true. Start with Turbo Negro and go from there.
Let them do the research for you. That's right. What they're there for. The scholarly endeavors of Turbo Negro.
No one's ever said that.
No. And nor will they ever again. I'm trying to make my time, Chris, because you got to go do a photo shoot. You're like a legit... Are you guys going to see Mets tonight? Who's going to see Mets?
Thank you. Someone wants to take our picture, and Damien wanted to monopolize some
it's
of my
me,
time.
Chris. I'm going to force this gag till I actually get my stupid phone to work and take the picture.
He's been, trolling me for days. Yo, he followed me onto the airplane and made me drive him to the hotel.
Here's how this happens at the airport. I get to the airport, and he's like, yay! And I'm like, I just finished eating, a giant sandwich. So I'm like, and just give him a big hug. And then he's like, oh, so where are you sitting? I'm like, 21D. And he's like, I'm like, what are you, 19, 20? He's like, I got bumped up. I'm like, oh, fancy pants. I walk in, Mr. Business Class is sitting all up in the thing, so of course I had to take a picture of him and put it online.
He did, but I definitely had the oldest guy in the world snoring in my face the whole time, so it was comfortable.
We think we had this
conversation. But not that comfortable.
We had this conversation. Everyone who's flown on a plane for any amount of time knows that a baby might be the worst thing to be stuck beside. An old person is way fucking worse, because a baby will eventually tire itself out and go to sleep.
Yeah.
No, this person...
But an old man will go to sleep and not wake up, and so if you have to pee or something, you just actually can't get past the guy. Well, I was reading. I was just doing my best to take my mind off my bladder. And this guy's just snoring in my face the whole time. Just, it was almost like he was taunting me. He's like, I know what you have to do. But you can't do it because I'm not waking up. And I think about, like, maybe taking up parkour and jumping over him, but it's not going to work out. Anyways, he woke up. I peed. Everything was fine. Bladder's good.
That's when you take a page from my book and pee in his magazine thing.
What? Did you do that?
No, God, no. I'm, like, the most timid human being in the world.
All right.
I'm like a flower, a wilting flower. But, Chris, I want to keep you here all day, buddy. We got to do another podcast. We got to do part two eventually.
We literally talked about zero punk rock.
We talked about punk rock. We talked about
Hamilton. The least punk rock things.
We talked about Turbo. That's true. We talked about NAMBLA. We talked about Allen Ginsberg. We talked about the... Why am I ruining footnotes?
I'm done.
You're ruining footnotes, Chris. So Chris is going to take a photo, and here's where we actually test how punk he is. Can he take a photo and make it back here for the end of the show?
We'll see.
One, two, three, go! I should have turned off my like auto screensaver thing so I could do this thing. Dave, come on over, buddy. Damn it!
Man, I didn't know that all the audio like music cues were gonna go with this as well.
I'm bringing high production here. I didn't show up at this podcast with just like. No, I did show up.
Yeah.
I was just figuring it out as I got.
All right. So for my notes, real quick, am I too loud? Is that the Steve from Town of Hardcore, or is that a different Steve?
That's a different Steve.
Oh, okay.
This is almost like if you were to make them into a diagram of a spectrum, one Steve would be on one side, and the other Steve would be on the complete opposite side.
Then there's a note on if it's not, because that guy seems like it's something with an...
Well, let's go into Steve Perry. Steve Perry, who's the Steve we're talking about, who played in Countdown to Oblivion, was the second singer with Chris Callahan, played in this band called One Blood, which was a reggae-influenced hardcore band from Toronto that put out a 7-inch on War, or an LP on War Dance Records.
Well, all right. You know, when I think Toronto, I assume like everyone else, I think
Drake.
Reggae is where I go.
Yeah, okay. And this isn't even a joke. Toronto has an incredible reggae scene because so many Jamaican expats settled there in the 70s and into the 80s. So there's so many dancehall and reggae artists that came up. And also Toronto, there's a hair salon. And in the basement, it's called Monica's. It's on St. Clair. If you ever come to Toronto, go there. It's got a basement just full of fucking records. And it's a hair salon. Like, people getting their hair done, and then you're just like, I'm just going to go see your records in the basement.
Is it a store, or just, like, there's records?
You buy stuff. I don't know how it works on the actual practical level. I only went there with a friend who was, like, digging, and I'm just, like, sitting there, like, can we go get doubles soon or something?
I don't know if, like, the statute of limitations is on stuff like that, but there was a friend who worked at a record store in North Jersey who, I don't think that store's there anymore, but at one point we were just, like, hanging out. He's like, do you just want stuff? You can just take whatever you want in the basement. And then, so, like, it wasn't like, you know, Velvet Underground Acetates, like, you know, scores per se, but that was just, like, one of those things that, like, blows your mind. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it was, like, clean up on a lot of the, like, random filler, like, I should own this SST record on 10-inch, too, right? Like, that kind of hole filling.
I guess that's why that store's not around anymore, Dave.
Yo, that's a store... That's the urban legend store of being like, oh, my friend got like the Misfit 7-inch there, like from still being there. Like someone I know got a Citizen's Arrest on Red there.
I like to think that there's still amazing records in basements all over the world, and it just takes someone lonely and nerdy enough or crafty enough to go down there and search.
Yeah.
I spent one time 8 hours in the basement of a record store. I clocked out for lunch and then clocked back in just digging. I got like 10 7-inches, probably worth $100. Not really worth it for the time put in.
No, not.
It was fun though.
Okay.
My lungs are still paying for it from all the mold I ingested and all that.
As that podcast, that portion of it did not go very punk. My only other notes were as far as injuries at a show, I'll just say that I got hit in the face at the No Justice last show. Opening, like, words weren't out of the microphone yet. Like, opening strum of guitar chord, hit in the face.
Well, that's
got stitches.
This puts in perspective the difference between your country and Chris and my country. At
a show in Toronto, someone's going to throw a root beer in your face. Dave, at a show in New Jersey.
No, it was in D.C.
In D.C., got a fucking cymbal, like stand, thrown in his face. And that video is, I don't know, there's two angles. There's several angles for it. But I had this one angle on tape. Do you want to, is it okay if I relive this
with
you?
No, go for it.
Okay. And the angle is, it's No Justice, and they start playing, and he's like, yo, fuck this dude shit up. And he grabs the cymbal stand and throws it, and you're like, oh, it's going to hit the camera. And then it's just like this dude's head, like, doof. And you're like, oh, shit. And then he turns around, and you're like, oh, it's Dave from Tear It Up. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Just blood, crimson mask.
Yeah, my face covered in blood, and it's like at a show where there's like trying to get your car's worth of people. It was not like an easy task. So like they were done by the time it was like, okay, we're all here. Went to a DC emergency room, which truth be told, there was a lot of actual emergencies there.
Yeah,
so I sat there for quite a while. It's like one of those things that I already told my mom that I was like, I'm going to the hospital. That I'm like, it'll be real bad if I see her tomorrow. And it's like, oh, I just left. It took too long. But I eventually got stitches and then I drove because everyone else was too sleepy.
The story I heard is that you went back to the show.
I did not go back to the show. I was probably just still there trying to leave.
Yeah, just like, he was there, he came back, dude. But you're just trying to find the people to get out.
Yeah.
How many stitches was that?
That was only like four or something.
Really?
It wasn't a lot, yeah. It was like three.
You should go into wrestling, Dave. You're a bleeder.
And I played the next day.
You played the next
day? Yeah, Tara played CB's the next day. That's
punk points.
Yeah, yeah.
Right there.
That's what you got to do, man. What, are you going to not play CBGB's?
Well, we also got to talk about another band that you played with, the aforementioned Haymaker.
Yes.
At that Toronto show, which was supposed to be my band's first show before I was in the band.
Could have been.
Why? Boom. Yeah. Boom. Dave's mind's blown. That's why he's just saying could have been right now.
Yeah, why didn't you play?
Because I wasn't in the band, but also they couldn't get together. But that show was, I think you saw that Toronto did have not just a root beer in the face side, it had like a dark side.
There was, knocking stuff over. Was there, just on a note to that, was like one of the other dudes going to sing, or was there like, is there like the same way Agnostic Front or Cro-Mags have their like Eric Casanova or whatever that, you know, like, is there someone who's like, oh yeah, I was the original singer, fucked up.
Yeah, Josh. Our guitar player.
Josh?
Yeah,
okay.
He went to Train Hop around America, and so they were like, we need someone to fill in for two shows, and I was that good. And 15 years later, no, I'm just kidding. Josh came back, and Josh was that bad that Mike said, you have to move on to guitar.
Okay, so he's still there then, at least.
Oh, yeah, no, he's still in the fold. Yeah, definitely. And his vocals have gotten a million times better. I think he fucked up his voice. He started singing in a hardcore band called Youngblood when he was like 12 years old, and his voice hadn't changed. And it was like the gnarliest, most militant, vegan, hardline band that 11-inch
prime age for militant vegan.
I'm trying to remember. Like, I'm getting confused with that Shai Hulud song, My Heart Bleeds the Darkest Blood. And I'm getting confused with that Raid song, Bleed Green Blood. But they had some song about bleeding a blood of a certain shade, and I can't, or color, and I can't remember what it was, that was horrifically bad, in the best way possible. Well, Dave, move back to the perch.
I'll go to
my spot. I got an invite.
You guys ever watch Kids in the Hall? Yep. Well, everyone in Turned Out of Punk, like on that show, is also named Dave. So I would like to welcome from Cultural Abuse, my friend Dave, to the stage. Fading it out. I'm not going to make you have to listen to the whole thing again. Don't worry.
I like that song, dude.
You?
Yeah.
I had to pick music that I didn't have to pay people for, so I just stole from all my bands that didn't have publishing deals.
Dude, you should have me write you a song.
You can write me a song anytime. So you guys are probably right now one of the coolest bands in the world, one of my favorite bands going, and also a band that I've never seen play.
Dude. Yeah, we can't get in. Because, like, we're a gang and not...
You can't get into Canada.
We don't have members, dude. Yeah, we can't get into Canada.
But you can.
Yeah. But real bad boys don't get in trouble.
That's true. You know you're bad when you never get caught.
Yeah.
The cops are gone still, right?
Subway?
Okay. But I wanted to kind of like... I'm going to have you on the podcast for real, but just as a teaser, what was your first exposure to punk?
I mean, I guess if you consider, like, when I grew up, like, only listening to, like, Motown and like the Beatles and shit, like just shit that my parents listened to, and I didn't know, and I didn't really question if there was like other music. But like my dad bought this pickup truck from this guy that lived in this mobile home, like weird trailer thing with a bunch of clowns everywhere, and I was like really little, and then I was digging around in the truck, and I found Beastie Boys cassette tape of License to Ill.
Okay.
And I remember like I grew up like in the middle of nowhere in like a one bedroom like cabin thing, and I pretty much just like slept on the couch my entire life.
In like the West Coast or?
Yeah, like out by Yosemite in California. Am I close enough? Do you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Who knows what puppet has put their mouth on this today?
I know. Most microphones smell like cum to me.
Oh, that thing. It tastes different.
But yeah, I totally remember like listening to that record on headphones, like looking at my parents, and my parents are like down, like they're like bikers and hippies and shit, and so they don't really give a fuck. But I still remember like listening to License to Ill and being like, they can't know about this at all. Like this is mine, you know.
So like, did you ever get to see the Beastie Boys?
No,
I never saw them either.
No.
They're like one of the one that got away from me.
But they're also so big that like I'm not that tall and I'm not that like aggressive in a big group of people that I probably like even if I went to see them I couldn't see them really, you know, like so I watch a video and then that's cool.
They did. Someone told me the other day that around the time of the Elio Aglio EP, is that it? Elio Aglio EP?
Yeah.
Can someone confirm or deny that? I'm close enough, right? I'm close.
No, you're just making up words,
man.
Hey,
T.T.! I thought you were... do you want to come on later on? Okay, we'll come... we work it all out. All right. So, where were we? Oh, we're talking about that fucking Elio Aglio. I heard they play basement shows. They would just show up at shows in Japan and play like... But there's no basements in Japan. I'm seeing the lies in this story now as I repeat it to you. I never once thought... a basement the entire time I've been in Japan.
Yeah.
Granted, they went over there
and built basements.
They built a basement. They're that popular. They're like, dig a pit. We're going to play in a pit tonight.
Well, it's for children.
Yeah. But I heard they would just go there and play like a punk set. I knew that.
That's sick.
That's how I'd like to see them.
They are like the best punk band. I mean, not like the best. You know, like, but the punk shit that they did is
a lot sicker
than our punk bands.
No, I think you guys... the first piece... Here's the thing. The Beastie Boys became a better punk band.
Heart Attack Man, dude.
That's the thing. It's not as... that shit's way better than the A Grade on Mojo 7-inch to me. This is a footnotes debate. I can see you already heating up for this one, Dave, in the corner.
Dave, you should have switched my name. Because when you called out Dave, I thought it was me. But
no, I've got so many Daves in my life. These are the Daves I know. These are the Daves I know. Kids in the Hall for you guys that said you knew it, so fuck it if you didn't.
Rancid.
Yo.
Rancid.
That's kind of your Kids in the Hall, I guess, right?
Rancid. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck Kids in the Hall is.
You know,
other than like the comedy thing.
That's the comedy thing.
But is that punk? Does that have punk?
Someone does not listen to this podcast, apparently, because I had Scott Thompson, one of the members of the Kids in the Hall, on the show, and it's one of the best episodes, Dave!
I've only listened to Lars's... from Rancid, dude.
You've only listened to the Lars one? It's the best one, though.
I
listened to
it a couple times, though.
It's amazing, that one. It's if you haven't listened to it, here's just a synopsis of one of the crazier moments in that thing. Lars, at age 11, smokes dust, PCP, at a friend's girlfriend's house when she's not there. They have to wrap the dog in chewing gum because the dog won't stop barking and they're tripping on PCP. And it's a prize-winning show dog, so don't worry. They get paid back for that in a minute. And then he ripped his friend's eye out. If you have not listened to that episode, you will never listen to Rancid in the same way again. It makes it... I love Rancid. I fucking love Rancid. And after that episode, I'm like, I love him even more now!
Yeah.
Low-key, though... Do you think Rancid's best songs are on comps? Brothels?
Okay.
Tattoo?
I'm not necessarily like a song person.
Okay.
I'm not like an album. I'm like a collective idea of work.
So what's your Rancid record?
Rancid 2000.
Oh, the self-titled 2000 record?
Okay. Yeah, that one's the best hardcore album that ever existed.
Once again, I don't know about that, Dave, but we...
No, I'm not asking.
No, I know you're not asking. But I'm telling you that I don't know about that, Dave.
Fucking eighth grade, dude. I was banging that shit.
I love that record, too. but the best?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll make it anyways. Okay. Like Don Giovanni. It's got everything. And I...
Never love till I fell in love with you. We're just gonna do rancid back and forth.
That's not on that album.
I know it's on Let's Go, which is a fucking perfect album.
Do they? Yeah, Let's Go. Yeah.
Never love till I fell in love with you. Never knew what a good time. Fuck you guys.
I
have
a good time with you.
When the music hits, I feel no pain at all.
I've listened to Rancid for like 40 years and I don't know the words.
I know, that's the thing, is like, but Tim might not be the best enunciator in the history of music.
Yeah, but neither is fucking Bob Dylan or Tom Petty or all the fucking greats, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So you're
like the best.
You're saying the best vocalists of all time.
Tim Armstrong.
Are the Slur.
Joe Strummer. Which
Bob
is
Dylan.
Tim Armstrong. And Jim Carroll.
Jim Carroll, too.
From Jim Carroll Band.
Yo, and know where I heard about Jim Carroll for the first time?
Rancid.
And Out Come the Wolves.
Do you guys know that it's Jim Carroll on the Out Come the Wolves part?
And he named the record.
It's on the record, yeah.
No, he named the record. They took the name from that poem.
And Out Come the Wolves. They pause, trampling in the snow, the alphabet. I stand on my head, watch it all go away.
You're like Eminem Jim and 8 Carroll. Mile, dude.
That's not, how many kids like that grew up with and they'd be like, yeah, that's Tim Armstrong. He sounds crazy. You know, and it's not, though. It's not. It's Jim Carroll. It's the dude that wrote Basketball Diaries. If you've seen Basketball Diaries, he plays Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yep. And he's
that's
in it, too.
That dude.
He's the heroin addict that gives him the shot at one point,
yeah,
too.
He's the real cool guy.
He makes it. Yeah, he's like, comes off. And also, he wrote this
doing
song.
Doing heroin's hella cool and smoking dust, too.
Well, weed. Keep it weed. But, let's get tested. But Jim Carroll, like, in that sequence, yeah, you're just like, it's a cool, it makes that movie, but also wrote this song, These Are People Who Have Died.
Yeah.
It's one of the best punk
songs.
I will stand by it.
All the people who died. It's really long.
And there's a lot of people he knows that have died.
Yeah, and then he talks about them dying again after he talked about them once.
It's sad.
That is sad.
It's a
people
sad
who
song.
Die.
And
everyone's
dead.
Gonna die. You're
Fuck.
All gonna die.
Don't, Dave. Don't.
We're all gonna die.
Shut up!
Hopefully a bomb drops on us this weekend.
Fuck this man. Okay, we're gonna move on in 2 seconds, guys. Don't worry. But before we do.
Rance is the best man ever.
And that's how the world would go out thinking.
As long as you can upload this shit still.
I'm definitely gonna upload this thing. What are you talking about? This is free content for me. Like, I don't have to do another episode. This is amazing. I really am excited that I got to do this. But I want to tell, like, Jim Carroll, before I let you go, I'm going to force you to hear my story.
I got more to talk about, dude.
Well, I know, but that's why I'm doing a whole podcast with you too, Dave.
It's just
a teaser. Because I wanted to have, like, I've got a bunch of returning people, but I want to have someone new. And then I'm going to have someone borrowed and someone blue later on. And we're going to have...
Married?
We're going to blow that wedding off the stage from earlier.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Why not us, man?
Well, because I'm married, and it would be polygamy is not legal in Texas, and nor is it in Canada yet. But if it is, you move in, because I need an extra set of hands, because I got 3 fucking kids.
Hey, I got like 1.5.
Dude, kids?
Hands.
Okay, well, then it's all hands on deck, because we need it right now. Right. But I met when my brother and I found out that it was Jim.
My gum's melting in my mouth. Do I swallow it? Does it really stay in you for 7 years?
No, it poos out.
It's gone, dude. It's gone. It's probably because we're smoking the hash oil pen back there.
Shh.
It's just hash.
Shh.
It's not dust. That's later.
There's a dust pen. Someone's passing around a dust pen somewhere. And people are getting lit. Actually, in Vancouver, someone told me you could retrofit a weed pen for a DMT. And I'm like, that is the most terrifying thing anyone could ever tell you. But,
that's crazy.
But my brother and I went and meet Jim Carroll, and we met him at this thing, at this radio station. And then he gave us free tickets to come see him do this poetry reading. And we're like 14 and 12 at the time. And we go, and we see him. We're like waiting, and then we wait to meet him. And he signs our Rancid CD. And then he proceeds to tell us how he met Rancid for like 35 minutes, and our parents are waiting outside. It's like, we gotta go, dude. And he's like, no, Rancid came to me and they said you should come down to the studio and we can play a song. And I wrote this song. He goes, starts going through the lyrics and breaking it down. And it's like one of those things where you meet someone you really want to meet, and then you're like, oh, fuck.
I gotta go. This man. Is
like when people meet me, I find this normally the way.
Yeah. I gotta go.
You gotta go, Dave.
I gotta take selfies.
You gotta go take some selfies.
That other guy got a picture taken. Who's gonna take a picture of me, dude? No one asked me that.
Well,
I got a good meeting Rancid story, too.
Well, tell me your meeting Rancid story. Well, wait, no, should we save that for the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck you guys. You don't care. No.
Do they care? They're just waiting for the air sex champions.
Is that coming up? Is that the headliner tonight?
It's next.
Oh, it's next?
It's fucking next.
Dave is always poking in the background.
And I'll always just be like,
leering. All right, tell me your Rancid story quickly, though.
Wait, really?
Yeah, why not? I want to hear a Rancid story. Who wants to hear a Rancid story?
Okay. I'm going to lay it down for you. It was Warped Tour. It was like my birthday. It was like 99 or 2000, around that. It wasn't actually my birthday, but my parents would buy us tickets to go see them at Warped Tour at Boreal Ski Resort because my mom loves Less Than Jake. And
well, she
does.
Motown
and Hazen Street.
Like,
Hazen Street.
Those That's are the two bands?
She loves Hazen Street. We were supposed to fly out to Black and Blue Bowl to like go see them play, but then we ended up having to do like a fucking art show release.
Can you ask your mom to come
bullshit.
On my podcast?
Oh, she would.
Because
she's down.
Awesome.
She went and saw like Sly and the Family Stone, all that shit. Like,
wow.
Back in the day. Like, saw Marvin Gaye with Led Zeppelin.
Do you ever want to sit her down and be like, yo, there's other stuff happening now that's different.
Hazen Street, dude. She's down. Bayside, Hazen Street, Less Than Jake. That's my mom. She's got black and pink hair, dude. She's a punk
that's
rocker.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we went to go see Warped Tour, and we were, like, out swimming in the pool. Like, we got in the night before. And we got back to the hotel room. My dad's like, hey, like, there were some guys with, like, mohawks and stuff, like, that I helped, like, work on their car and, like, you know, and we're like, yeah, shut up, Dad. Like, you don't know that. Because we met some other band that was playing like the Ernie Ball stage, and like they sound like Limp Bizkit or like Korn or some shit. And I was in like sixth grade or something, just being like, this is still bullshit. So my dad's like, so by then I'm like, any band that's staying here, it sucks, you know? And then we like go to Warped Tour and make my parents stand in like a different spot in line, you know, and like I spiked down my hair, and it was real.
As you do,
real
as
fucking
you do.
Cool. Yeah, still, I'll do it later.
No, that's what I'm saying. Warped Tour fashion, of course.
Right, and but later on, like throughout the day, like we were walking by, and we walked by that band Sugar Cult's like merch booth, and they were like, "Hey, like you want to sign our email list?" I was like, "Oh, okay. Like, what does it sound like?" And he was like, "Do you like Less Than Jake?" I was like, yeah, I fucking love Less Than Jake.
Like, fuck yes.
And he's like, it sounds like that. And so I'm going to sign it, and then I hear Rancid start playing, and I was like, I got to go. Like, Rancid's, like, the best band ever. So I got to go. And then as I'm, like, taking off, like, walking away, the dude from Sugar Cult comes up, and he's like, yo, I'll bring you on stage. Like, you want to go watch Rancid? I was like, fuck yeah. And
she's like, you have
so
to sign
did.
This email list first, though, please.
So, but we got to go up there. Got to, like, take a bunch of pictures of, like, Rancid playing. I still remember him, like, playing Ruby Soho and, like, saying, like, echoes of reggae coming through my bedroom wall, and his hand was moving across, and it was just, like, the most beautiful thing ever. And, like, afterwards, they, like, were getting off stage, and the guy from Sugar Cult was like, yo, like, you meet this kid. Like, he loves your band. And, like, they all, like, chilled, and it was, like, really cool. I told them that we were in a band called the Caltransvestites. Because, like, the road in California, we're from California, and Caltrans is, like, the road workers, like, the people holding brooms and, like, watch shit go by. But I was in, like, sixth grade. We didn't even play instruments. Like, we just were in a band. Like, my whole life, I was just gonna be in a band. Like,
what would you have done if Tim's like, send me the demo to Caltrans?
Well, no. Well, so we were, like, you know, chilling, and it was cool. And then it was, like, before cell phones and shit. So, like, once Warped Tour was over, we were like, well, I have to go. Like, I told my parents that I'd meet him by the car, and there's no way that I can be like, yo, Ma, I'm chilling with Rancid. Let me stay here for a while. You're fucking everything up. Even though you bought me tickets and you brought me there and you brought me into this world. But so then we're like, you know, going back and we're like driving back to our hotel room, and this like little Nissan comes by, and my dad's like, oh, those are the dudes that I like worked on their car, and it's just Rancid in like a little Nissan. I don't know what the fuck car brands are really at all, so I don't know, is it Toyota?
No matter what it is, let's hope it's a Nissan.
But it's like some like four-door like little thing, and they're chilling because they're Rancid and they're sick as fuck. And so we like go back to the hotel, and we go back to the hotel, and there's like a pizza place inside of the hotel where it has like a little video game room too. So we like go home. It's Boreal Ski Resort in the summer, so it's like these dust. It's just like dust everywhere. So we like showered up, put on our new shirts. I put on Me First and then Gimme Gimme's one with like a fucking martini glass. I'm like 12 years old, like braces, fucking idiot. And my friend puts on a Rancid shirt too, and we like go. We go to the, like the pizza place with my parents, and we hear, "Yo, Dave!" And we look over, and it's Rancid just playing video games in this like little video game room. And my parents were hella cool, and we're just like, "All right, like see you later." And they took off, and they like walked up, like all of Rancid walked up to like me and my friends, and like they're like, "Yo," like Lars Fredriksson was like, "Yo, nice shirt, man!" Like to my friend, and I was like, "How does it feel to see someone that you don't know wearing your band t-shirt?" And he was like, "Put out your hand, man." And I put out my hand, and he dumped a bunch of fucking quarters in it. And he was like, "Feels like that. Like, let's go play some video games." Like, and we played like Pac-Man and all this shit. It was so cool. They like smelled like shit too. And it was funny because they were like, "Yeah, we went back to the hotel room so we could shower because we got to drive." But it was like, "No, you smell like shit, dude." But it was cool. And then I wanted to smell like shit, too, because Rancid's fucking the best band ever. I wear this jacket every day. It's like my little safety cocoon because I feel really uncomfortable like getting in front of a lot of people.
You're trying to be Rancid
until
still.
Yeah. So this actually probably does stink. But I got like Cliff Bars in here and shit like that.
Well, if you want a snack, find Dave.
Yeah,
Dave,
there's hella snacks here. Don't pay for shit. Talk to us, and we'll try to give you a beer.
Support the people that want to eat food too.
Yeah,
they gotta eat food.
Eat
with their food. Buy food too. Don't listen to this guy. Don't listen to this record stealer, and don't listen to the greatest hardcore record ever guy over here about their advice. Dave, this is fucking awesome. Stay tuned for part one on a real episode.
I'm gonna say the same exact thing,
Dave. I want to bring you over here for footnotes, Dave. Dave. But we got limited time left, and I got a huge guest that I got to bring out here, ladies and gentlemen. I was thinking today, ladies and gentlemen, people, whatever you identify as, I should say. But I've had people on this stage that play in great bands, bands I love, bands I grew up on, blah blah. But I haven't had a real champion here yet. I'm talking about someone who's actually held legit gold around their waist. I'm talking about someone that unites the twin passions that motivate this world, punk rock and professional wrestling. I'm talking about the greatest guest ever, ever on Turn It a Punk, coming back for a third time, my friend MVP.
Funny if he doesn't come out.
I know. If you no-showed me, that would be amazing.
Oh! After that intro, I was scared I couldn't live up to the hype. So
almost
left, man.
If you haven't heard MVP's two episodes on this show, they will blow your fucking mind. You, sir, and I've told you this countless times now, have had a cinematic life beyond the scope of many.
Unbelievable. I say all the time that I have done and experienced things that most people have only seen on a movie screen. And maybe one of these days I'll bring mine to a movie screen.
Yeah.
One of these days, we'll see.
One of these days. But like, and not necessarily always in a positive thing like you see on the movies. It wasn't all...
No!
It wasn't all the end of Rocky 2.
No. You know, it's funny because, you know, I was talking to somebody about, you know, the amount of time that I spent in prison. And for those black helicopters, they're watching us.
It's because we've been talking about PCP too much.
We are both on somebody's list, I'm sure.
We are.
Talking about the amount of time that I had spent in prison, mm-hmm. and it's one of those weird things where, you know, in a movie, you know, in Hollywood, whatever, you see a guy gets locked up, and then you know, commercial break, you go grab a sandwich and come back, and he's back out on the streets. But in real life, you do that shit day for day, hour for hour, minute for minute. There's no commercial break, and you come right back, you know? So just the reality of, like, when the judge says, okay, you have a, in my case, an 18-and-a-half-year sentence. Oh, shit, I'm 16 years old. Wait a minute, man. I'm going to be old, you know, like 30-something. And I couldn't even count that high at that point. But, you know, fortunately to be able to take such a negative and weave it into a positive. Shout out to my man Primetime Daryl Davis, who was the correctional officer who introduced me to professional wrestling, who ultimately saved my life. You know, from being at the valley of, as I was talking about earlier, spending 67 days in administrative confinement, you know, mm-hmm. the whole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think you can get any lower than that to the high of standing in a ring at WrestleMania and being like, wait a minute, I'm wrestling for the United States Championship on Wrestle fucking Mania. Like, you know, so talk about peaks and valleys, you know.
But that and you mentioned that solitary confinement, or what did you describe it as? Sorry.
AC was administrative confinement.
Okay.
Where you spent 7 days in disciplinary confinement. Court, where they say, okay, you're guilty. And then 60 days in disciplinary confinement, DC. So a total of 67 days.
And that's, you heard Nirvana just before that happened, right?
Oh, yeah, I told you about it. Yeah, so,
this is a crazy.
As a matter of fact, for that deal, the prison I was at the time was DeSoto Correctional. And when you were in administrative confinement, you were under investigation. So you could have all your property. And or you could have your radio, your headphones. And then once they find you guilty and you go to disciplinary confinement, you got underwear, T-shirt, comb, toothbrush, and flip-flops or something like that. And at the time I got locked up, like I was 14 turning 15 when I first got turned on to punk, and you know, I was just turned on to this brand new sound, this new experience. You know, I just had absolutely fallen in love with Bad Brains, and then you know, Don Greatest. Yeah, can we finally get them in the Hall of Fame? Yeah, can we, yeah, really, you know, if you got a ballot, can we please make that happen? And then Donnie, you know, Zach and Donnie, you know, turned me on to Fishbone and gave me my first Fishbone cassette. And then, you know, all of a sudden I've just got this brand new avenue of music. And this is before there was the label Alternative didn't exist yet. You know, shout out to Open Records in North Miami Beach back in the day, where I had to go specifically to find that kind of music, you know, that they didn't have at Specs or Peaches. And I ended up getting locked up right as I'm really falling in love with this genre and going to shows and coming into my own as a teenager. And now I'm in prison where all you get is, you know, 94.9 K-Rock or, you know, some, and that's it. That's all there is. And where I was at, I was able to sometimes, if you hold the radio just right, catch a certain college station or, you know, they had some, little maybe public access type stations where they would actually play, you know, real punk and hardcore, and you know, and you know, I would be able to, in almost like taking a shot of pure adrenaline, I would be in my cell and I'd hear, oh my God, it's Bad Brains! Oh shit, I haven't heard Bad Brains in 3 years! I'd, you know, lose my shit. So you know, I was in confinement for this, you know, this bogus case where the officers just pretty much set me up. And I'm sitting on my bunk, and I have my headphones on, and I have my radio, and I heard the opening chords, you know, that dong ga dong ga dong ding ga dong dong ga dong ga dong ding ga dong, and I immediately went, "Oh shit! Wow! because this is the closest thing on mainstream radio that I had heard that compared to this new shit for me that I was into. And the very first time I heard Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, I was in confinement at DeSoto Correctional Institution, and like I was locked up, but I was in my fucking room just bouncing my cell, like bouncing off the walls and going, oh shit, this is amazing. And that went on to become fucking Nirvana.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you mentioned Zach Blair there and Donnie Blair, Zach Blair, of course, Austin resident, member of Rise Against, Dracula's, Vanishing Life. That's a very mediocre applause for a local hero. But we glossed over that. You met the Blair brothers when you got shipped to Sherman, Texas, just before you went to ultimately what sent you to prison, that old moment right. in your life. And you actually befriend the Blair brothers, randomly meeting them, and teach them to help stand up for themselves. This is fucking crazy, and it's all laid out in the podcast from Zach, too. And it's like, how did that is, doesn't that still blow your mind? And then, like, years later, you guys meet up again, and you fucking have to save the Misfits from Macho Man Randy Savage. I'm not plugging my podcast here, but that episode with MVP and Zach Blair where they recount the Macho Man showing up to fight the Misfits, holy, I was happy when my children were born. And that story was like second just below that.
I still
that.
Have a photo of me clean shaven, like literally weeks out of prison, before wrestling school, backstage at that show with the Macho Man. And I'll never forget, like, I was there with my younger brother, who's actually bigger than I am, and a state wrestling champ. And the bouncers and two cops came over to us and said, hey, you guys are some pretty big guys. If we have to handle him, will you help us out? You know? Man, I'm like, man, that's the motherfucking Macho Man. Fuck you, man. And I walked over to Macho, and I was like, hey, Macho Man, what's up, man? God damn, you were fucking jacked, man. He's like, oh, yeah, brother, you got to keep up with the young guys, yeah. And, you know, so I'm standing there talking to him, and I'm like, is it okay if I take a picture with you? And he's like, oh, yeah, for sure. He goes, man, brother, you're the only one here that's being nice to me. Everybody's being mean to me. Yeah, those guys over there, no good.
and it's unbelievable to think that's before you even train wrestling, right? Like before you.
Yeah, I hadn't even started wrestling school.
And
yet,
so, but you then fucking reconnect with the Macho Man through another person.
Yeah, like I said, man, my life has just been, it's weird because I don't subscribe to any religious ideology. I don't necessarily have a belief in a higher power. But, man, it sometimes seems like my destiny was kind of like laid out for me or some shit. Because, yeah, like this path that I led, that led me to pro wrestling and the people along the way, and, you know, Macho Man being one of those people, I won't get into the whole story, but I ended up doing something with him. And one of my specialties is in the wrestling business, we call it cutting promos. I grew up in the hood. I can talk shit. You know what I'm saying? So when we had to cut a promo, I went right at the Macho Man, you know, and like, man, I said, yeah, you used to be this, but what do you have now? A tube of Bengay, you know, a prescription for Viagra. And he loved it, you know, and he ended up, you know, we exchanged numbers. And you know, I'm a young indie guy, you know, trying to make it in the wrestling business. And sometimes my phone would ring and it would say Randy. And I'm just standing there like, fucking Macho Man is calling me. Like, and back then I used to wrestle under the name Antonio Banks. And, you know, just, you know, imagine my mind went on the other end. Hey, Antonio, brother, what's going on? You been wrestling lately? What have you got going on? I'm like, fuck, this is my... He's asking me about what the fuck I'm doing. This is a legend. This is the Macho King. And, you know, it was, you know, fortunate. Like, when I got signed, he called me up, and, you know, to congratulate me. And, you know, for those of you who know about the Macho Man, like, he was notoriously I don't want to use the word paranoid, but I'll just say cautious.
Madness might have been something
the
that was...
madness. Like, you know, he always felt that someone was always out to take your spot, you know. And in the wrestling business, you know, a lot of guys are always worried about, you know, someone trying to take your spot. And, you know, that was really, especially back in the day. And he said, the advice that he had for me, he said, of course, you know, don't trust anyone, brother, because everyone's out to take your spot. Yeah, don't trust them. And save your money. Yeah. Don't try to compete with those other guys and spend up your money looking cool, because then you'll be broke, and that's not cool. Yeah. And I bullshit you not, that's how he used to talk. That's not a gimmick. You catch the Macho Man at 3 a.m. and he's going to answer the phone. Hello, why are you calling me so early? Yeah.
Well, I just realized that I'm running out of time like crazy, but there is no thing in this world that sums up why I started this podcast more than the fact that through Punk, I can connect Rise Against to Sherry Shepherd, or Guar to Sherry Shepherd through, and you got to listen to those podcasts to get that part, but that is a truly amazing thing that we're dealing with.
Now, dude, what you do is truly an amazing thing. I mean, I met you, and, you know, we connected immediately, and I started listening to the Turned Out of Punk podcast,
yeah.
And is it phenomenal or what? Like, you know, he does a hell of a job. And, dude, I'm honored to be a part of it, man.
Thank you so much. Everybody, MVP! Yay! Dave, we're running out of time. You and me.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we got to just do this last footnote in a minute. We got 2 minutes. JT, I fucked up, dude. Okay. We're going to do a podcast. Altercation tomorrow, everybody. It's going to be fucking incredible. One of the funniest people in the world.
All right, just some quick stuff. The best record ever?
Yeah.
You want to just do that real quick?
Let's do the best record ever.
The best hardcore record.
Best hardcore record ever. Rancid 2000.
You know what? I didn't write that one down.
Okay. What is yours?
I have to say the Negative Approach 7-inch, right?
Okay.
Right. Like, as much as it seems like contrite, like you're supposed to be like, oh, the Clit Boys, like something weird, like... No, it's an 8 approach, 7-inch.
I agree. I would say if we're going LP, though, Feel the Darkness.
See, I tried to be... I just wrote 7 inches. That's
yeah, I know,
I know. What they're doing.
I know. It's a perfect format. But that's the thing. You have to go LP.
All right.
Rancid 2000 is an LP.
Yeah, but...
We have to count...
But like, by a show of hands, no one is going to say that that's their favorite record of all time.
I think it's...
Like,
that record's incredible.
No one's
saying I just don't
that.
Know if it's no the offense, best but. Hardcore record of all time.
Do you like that more than Victim in Pain?
No, I'm not saying I like it more than Victim in Pain.
Okay, see? That comes
but
back
as a hardcore record. As a hardcore record.
It comes back to Victim
as
in Pain.
As a Rancid record, I do prefer Rancid 2000 to Victim in Pain. For a Rancid record.
For a Rancid record, I would say that Rancid 2000 features more Rancid.
It's way more Rancid-y than Victim in Pain was.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I wanted to write down. I enjoy the Beastie Boys 7-inch. Oh, and because I don't have anything to say about Jail, thankfully, is Solitary Confinement the best song on Danger House?
That is the best song on Danger House?
Yeah, yeah. See, this is what Footnotes is for.
This song was kind of ruined by everything that happened in New York in the early part of this decade, or last decade, but... Let's Get Rid of New York by The Randoms is my favorite Danger House song.
So you like that more than We Are the One, We're Desperate?
Yep. I know, that's a bold statement.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
To pick the novelty record.
I was sitting over there on my phone going through Discogs being like, what's the best song on that record? And I honestly think it might be Solitary Confinement, but, you know, Let's Get Rid of New York is high on the list.
Okay, and Dave, what do you think about this? Because we talked about the Misfits. Misfits simultaneously... The greatest punk band ever, and not at all a punk band.
Correct. Like, they were a punk band, I think, by opportunity. Not that they were, like, cashing in because it was the 70s and it wasn't money to be had. But I think that's just what they ended up making.
Mm-hmm.
Love the Misfits. From New Jersey, I have to say that. But I feel it anyway. I don't subscribe to a single thing post Earth AD. Like, I don't hang with...
Couple tracks.
I don't hang with Project 1950 or American Psycho.
Couple
or,
tracks.
I did see the Misfits one time at in New York with the only person I knew there was Ralphie Boy, which is, if anyone knows who that is, that's the singer of Disassociate. Like,
we got to wrap up, though.
All right, fine.
I want to talk about Ralphie Boy and Disassociate.
They played one song I knew.
The Misfits played one song you knew?
Yes, it was awful.
Wow. Okay, well, everyone, thank you so much. Can I bring everyone back on stage? Chris Florak made it back! King of Toronto Punk! Chris Florak made it back! Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host.
Let's take a photo. Who wants it? Can someone take a photo of us real quick?
Thank you, Dave, Chris, and MVP. That was incredible. I had a great time. Thank you, everyone that came out and watched that. I met some fans of the show, people that really dig this thing, and I really appreciate every single one of you that came up and said something nice, because that was a ton of fun. Thank you to Sound on Sound, everyone at Sound on Sound for having me, and you know, that was, I can't wait to do that again, and I will be doing that again. That's right, December 12th in Boston, or Alliston, Massachusetts, at Great Scott. The next day, December the 13th at Black Hat in Washington, D.C. Wednesday, December 14th at Johnny Brenda's, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And then December 15th, Thursday at Rough Trade in Brooklyn, New York to wrap it up. That's going to be like kind of the, I guess, a holiday party of sorts too for the show. I'm deciding that now. So there you go. This is going to be a super fun tour. There's a lot of surprises. I'm working on even more guests. Every episode's going to have, as I say, like, you know, or as I say, as I've illustrated, it'll have about three or four guests, and it'll be sort of like fun interviews. There'll be a Q&A at the end. You know, like, I'm going to try and make it, you know, as unawkward as possible. You know, I'm going to try and make this like just like a super fun hang. Like if you were all here doing this podcast with me, you know, in this very, very hazy room with lots of records all around, you know, that's not what these places are going to be like. Don't worry. I'm not going to be hazing your venues up. I promise. But I will be turning out a punk inning it up at all these venues. So I hope to see you all there next week on the show. Whew. Speaking of part twos, this is a part two that I've wanted to do for a long time. Next week on the show, as I said before, when he was on the first time, one of the most gosh darn influential people to me in this music game out there. Next week on the show, coming back, Tony Erba from Nine Shocks Terror, from Gordon Sully Motherfuckers, from Steps Ex-Stepsister, from Face Value, and of course, the godly H100s. He'll be back for an amazingly hilarious part two. If you don't know Tony, you know, if you haven't listened to his part one, you are missing out. But he is back for a part two, and it's a good one. So anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Once again, if you want to get in touch with me, hit me up. Buy your tickets over at DamianAbraham.com. And yeah, I will see you all soon. Thank you very much. Go out there and make your own culture. And while you're at it, check out Bloodlust Tournament of Death. I should have warned you before. It's not for the faint of heart. It's a little gross, but it's amazing. Not because of me. Nothing to do with me. A lot to do with Shawnee. But, you know, it's great. It's great. Anyway, thank you, everyone. See you next week.